is the Grailian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grailian Report with your host, Mike Evans.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grailian Bunker, my friends, you know what time it is. Your weekly one-stop shop for the weird, the unusual, the strange, and the utterly fascinating. Yes, my friends, it is the Grailian Report, and I'm your host, Micah Hanks. Welcome to another week of weirdness. Joining me in studio, as always, we've got a couple of real swinging cats here. Oh, my gosh. Men born not of their time, first and foremost across from me, directly across the console, the man with the plan, the co-host, the producer, Mr. Chris Hayes. Chris, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for welcoming me. I'm great. How are you doing?
I didn't ask you how you were.
I know. I just wanted you to know that I'm better than yesterday, but not as good as tomorrow.
He hopes one day he'll be better than me, but he'll never be as kind and gentle, at least in his ocular features, as the Reverend himself, Mr. Matt Oakley, engineer of the program. Matt, how are you?
I'm absolutely wonderful.
You are just wonderful, aren't you?
Kind eyes Oakley over here.
Kind eyes Oakley. And you, my friends, you've locked in. This is the Grailian Report. Oh, goodness. Taking you beyond the fringes of insight and perhaps insanity as well. Tonight on the program, you know, we talk a lot about the denizens of the Hollow Earth, our little friends, the Hadals. Well, have we finally found evidence for real-life Hadals in Kentucky? Chris shakes his head and says, I hope not. But sadly, my friends, that very well may be exactly what we're going to have to bring you the truth about tonight here on the program. It's not necessarily something that I want to have to talk about, but in all likelihood, it's probably going to be, well, it's going to be put on the table. Now, I'm not going to speak to the veracity of this story. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to be the only one speaking about it at all. Our good friend Greg Newkirk of the Who Forted blog is going to be joining us live on the program in just a while to talk about this incredible development, which I believe Anomalous.com referred to as one of the biggest Fortean stories of the summer. We think so, too, and I'm sure that you will agree. And we'll just put it on the table and let you make up your own mind what is going on here. And we're also going to reopen from the classic archives, one of the most absolutely intriguing UFO encounters. It wasn't just an encounter. Okay, this was an encounter that may have ended in the death of one young civilian pilot. His name was Frederick Valentich. We're going to talk about that incident. It's absolutely one that makes my skin crawl. The Valentich UFO incident. Well, we're going to talk about that tonight on the program as well, because as was brought to our attention by one of our field correspondents, he's also a good friend of the program, and as I understand, he is now a blogger for Intrepid Magazine. Yes, none other than the enigmatic Mr. Red Pill Junkie. He sent along some information to us this week. Apparently, there have been files released about all these years after the fact. This took place in October of 1978, and all these years later, there have been new files released, I believe by the Australian government, that are talking about not only the backstory and what may or may not have happened that night when Valentich was flying along. He was headed over the Bass Strait in Australia flying a Cessna 18-2L. Okay, he was intending to land at King Island to pick up three or four of his friends, and all of a sudden he's, well, joined in the sky by something he couldn't explain. It's a very strange and rather heartbreaking story, honestly. We're going to dig into that one a little bit later tonight just as well. But, you know, something that I have neglected to do there's a lot of things I tend to neglect to do. First of all, I always neglect to mention a few things right off the bat. Are you following the Grailian Report on Facebook yet? No, I'm sorry, I misspoke. You follow on Twitter, right? We're on Twitter also, did you know that? Check us out on Twitter. But you like them on Facebook, right, Matt? That's what they do. Yeah. They like us on Facebook.
Exactly.
I'm working on this. I'm getting all my social networking lingo down.
I follow us.
Well,
I like us.
You like us, but do you follow us? Wait, I'm confused again. Don't confuse me. We have a Facebook page. Come like it if you haven't liked it already. And of course, you can also follow us on Twitter. On the Grailian Report. You can also follow me, Micah Hanks. I'm easy to find. Look me up on Twitter. I've got a very serious expression on my face, almost as serious as that expression Chris had on his face during your cameo in that wonderful little film that we linked over at the website this past week. That's right.
Do you mean Dave's Spirit Quest?
That's exactly what I mean. You know, actually, I liked that quite a bit. Both Matt and Chris appeared in that film. But if you haven't seen it yet, go head on over to the website, www.graylianreport.com, and check it out. Matt and Chris both have cameo scenes. I'd say I have to say I like Matt's cameo an awful lot.
Yeah, well, I know. I wasn't in the right, I wasn't in the proper foot attire to roll out of a cubicle like Matt was.
Yeah, but
even though we were both barefoot at the time.
The expression on Matt's face to sitting there at that desk. If you haven't seen it, I tell you, it's well worth a watch. Check it out at graylianreport.com. It's a little indie film project that these guys were a part of recently for the 48-hour film project here in Asheville. I think it was last weekend, is that right?
Last weekend, yes. And it also took place in 125 different cities around the world.
Wow. Not the filming of that particular film.
No, ours. We flew all over.
You did.
In 48 hours.
You guys must have been in as many countries as Kevin Smith, my friend, the talk radio host. You know, I was on his program last night, and he was telling me how many different countries he broadcasts in. And we had a great time on the program. And then we spent about another 55 minutes or so after the broadcast, chewing the fat, as they say. He's a Southern boy, too. Kevin's originally from Texas, and me being from North Carolina, I guess we had a lot to talk about. We're both from the South, we both like UFOs, and we're both talk radio hosts. So we ended up staying up much later than I probably should have last night, talking after the program. It was a lot of fun. If you haven't checked out Kevin Smith, check him out sometime. And, you know, I was also a part of that iConference that he did this past weekend, along with Greg Bishop and a few others. Well, that was a fun time. It was the first time I think I've spoken publicly, really, at length about the UFO singularity.
Well, I just want to say before we get shot by some Texans, because they're very proud people. They're a proud race. While geographically, yes, Texas is located in the South, they don't consider themselves Southern.
You know, I think a lot of people in Texas probably...
They're either Western or just Texan.
Some of them, I don't think, consider themselves part of the United States, or if they had their way, they would secede. You know, and that's been another hot issue. Boy, I tell you, this week, you know, I'm not getting in the middle of it. I am. I'm going to stay right in the middle. Because, you know, this debate over the Supreme Court decision with regard to the Affordable Health Care Act, you know, of course, we're talking about Obamacare by its more conventional title. This has been something that has absolutely been an item of contention. I've been getting all kinds of correspondence about this. As a matter of fact, you know, one of our correspondents who handles politics for the program, Cody Rizzuto, he's been a guest on the program in the past. He emailed me about this earlier this week. I apologize. I have not gotten back with you because there's been so much else going on. For instance, have you heard this one? Anderson Cooper of CNN has come out of the closet. He is gay. It's true.
I mean... That's cool, but it's not really a newsworthy story.
You know, that's the thing. I was looking at the news feed last night, and I saw that, and I'm thinking, you know, and what I love is the way that, you know, Anderson Cooper, you know, he's just like, hey, look, it's not been a big secret. I just hadn't come out and really said that. And frankly, I didn't want it to seem like, because I wasn't coming out and talking about it, that I was ashamed of it or anything. I'm completely comfortable with it, as you should be. Here I am, it's fine, and I just wanted to make that clear, that it's not a big deal, and in fact, for a lot of people, it's been common knowledge for some time now. But nonetheless, I'm still looking at that and thinking, okay, great, but is this really, I mean, worthy of, like, front page news on all the news sites?
Well, what's unfortunate isn't that he came out, because, you know, whether, you know, if you're gay or bi or straight, whatever, you are,
right.
Whatever you want to do is fine. I have absolutely no problems with that. The problem I have, not even with Anderson Cooper, is the fact that the media just took it and ran.
Because it's sensational.
But it shouldn't be a story. It's the 2000s. We should not care something like that. Should just be another one of those things like, oh my God, you drink white wine, I drink red wine, we can't be friends.
As our next promotion, for Paradigm Symposium, okay? Kevin was nice enough to let me talk about that on his program last night, by the way. In fact, he told me, wow, you guys interviewed Eric Von Daniken. He said, I've been trying for almost 13 years now to interview Eric Von Daniken. You know, Von Daniken is going to be at Paradigm Symposium. Check it out online, www.paradigmsymposium.com, if you haven't checked it out yet. I hear somehow there are still the biggest tickets that are actually left, and we sold three more just this afternoon, like within the last 2 hours before this program. Okay.
You know, I hate to butt in, Micah, but this is a far more relevant news story. We've got news from the chat room that a bigger story than Anderson Cooper's coming out is Tom Cruise is divorcing.
Well, we heard that one, too. Again,
yeah. I mean,
wow.
that's
And I mean, he's turning 50.
I don't know why we're talking about anything else but Tom Cruise divorcing from his whack-a-mole religion, although he's not divorcing from the religion. He's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's the thing, again. It's like week of non-news. News. Now, granted, the Supreme Court decision is news. Yes, if anything, and again, I'm not going to get into the politics of that. I do find it interesting that Chief Justice Roberts decided as he did and made the decision that he did. It's interesting, you know, and I think that if you're an honest political commentator, you set whatever your feelings are aside and you note the interest and the interplay between the characters involved and the circumstances. That's interesting to me. Oh, yeah. Absolutely interesting, without question. But it's not my job to feed the vitriol, you know. I'm not gonna get into that. You know, if there's something on your mind, if you have a feeling about that and you'd like to share it with us, you're welcome to. Email us here at the program, info@graylianreport.com. You can also send us a text message anytime at the following number. We're going to give this out, 828-367-7201. Again, that number, 828-367-7201, if you want to send us a text message anytime during the program, for those of you listening live, of course. But, you know, aside from the interest in the political matters at hand, and then the non-news that has probably, if anything, trumped all the serious news this week, you know, then there's this story that came out, okay? No less than probably six people the morning this came out were emailing me, or actually, look at this, I have an actual newspaper clipping that someone cut out and made, took the trouble to bring to me about that news story. Now, I got to get it back from you, Matt, because I got to read it. Actually, this news story reads as follows, and this actually made headlines on a number of mainstream... Yeah, Matt, actually, you were the first to send this to me. Of course, being Graylian staff, I'm very proud of that. But yes, later that day, someone cut this out of USA Today and handed it to me. I'm actually holding this in my mine aren't nicotine-stained fingers, but whatever. Many Earthlings believe in UFOs. Aliens often compete with superheroes, vampires, and zombies to top hit movie lists. But more than a third of Americans say UFOs are not a fantasy. That's the word from a new National Geographic Channel study finding that 80 million Americans are certain that UFOs exist and that 1 in 10 believe that they've spotted one. Now, of course, this information was released in conjunction with the launch of a new program on Nat Geo called Chasing UFOs. And as I mentioned to Kevin Smith on his... No, who was it? No, I've been doing so much radio lately, I can't remember which show I was talking about. No, I apologize. Sunday night on the Mothership Connection with Dobie Maxwell, I talked about this. They asked about that news story, and I said, funny thing about that, by the way, that show, Chasing UFOs, you know, when they were casting for that, yes, I think I can, now that it's actually on the air, I think I can finally talk about it. Yeah, I was approached by the producers, and they were interested in talking with me about, you know, the potential for having me involved in that program in some capacity. And, you know, over the last year, I've had a lot of options agreements and things like that thrown my way, you know, with people who are interested in doing UFO television programs. And I'll tell you this, for me to sign an options agreement, it would have to be pretty good. I haven't gotten one that really suits my liking just yet, and so I didn't go with one up to this point. Now, obviously, things didn't work out with Chasing UFOs, but I'm so glad to see that there are programs like this that are on television that, you know, whatever approach they're taking to the UFO mystery, they are taking it seriously, and we're seeing that there is genuine interest in this. And just like this headline reads, you know, here we are, and we've got our little pie chart. 36% say yes, they believe UFOs exist. Only 17% say no, and then the largest majority, of course, 48, say they're not sure.
Well, I mean, I'm a little distressed by the low percentage there. I mean, have you ever seen anything at all in the sky, and you weren't sure if it was a bird or a lightning bug or an NFT? Because if you've ever had
that kind of curiosity... Well, you got to tell them what an NFT is. Tell them what an NFT is.
I will never tell what an NFT is. It's a non-flashy thing.
Yeah, that's right. That's John Anderson, one of our announcers, years ago used to refer to him as... NFTs, non-flashy.
But if you've ever had to ask yourself that question, you, my friends, have seen a UFO. I'm not saying it's a UFO filled with little green men, but you've seen an unidentified flying object.
Precisely.
In the basis definition of the word.
Precisely.
So 100% of human beings should believe in UFOs. 33% believing that they're full of aliens. That I could get down with.
Yes, exactly. See, that's the whole thing. And actually, I wrote an article for Mysterious Universe earlier this week called Polled Position, UFOs and the Enigma of Public Opinion, that gets into that. Because what these kind of polls tend to show, not only you know, in terms of what, you know, whether people believe in UFOs, they also tend to show a lot of the stereotypes associated with UFOs, okay? There are a lot of UFO polls that have been taken over the years. Did you know that, for instance, a survey taken in 1977 found that while 92% of those polled knew who U.S. President Gerald Ford was following his term in office, okay? A poll administered 4 years earlier found that a slightly higher percentage, 95% to be exact, of those questioned were aware at least of the concept of what UFOs were. Okay, this is a few decades ago, granted. I thought that was pretty interesting, though, that at very least in terms of public awareness, 95% of people knew what UFOs were supposed to be. Okay, in 1996, a Gallup poll found that 71%, a vast majority, among U.S. citizens reporting in this poll did believe in government cover-ups pertaining to UFO sightings. Very interesting. Sci-Fi Channel also did a similar poll in 2002. And what this tends to show us is that over the years, although these numbers vary, with regard to UFOs, while the majority of people seem to know what they are, or maybe even that there's something going on and that they may be related to government, there is at least a small percentage that seems to think that, yes, these things actually exist, and whatever they are, they may be piloted by beings from outer space. Something I've been talking about an awful lot, though, on this program is the potential for these things to not be extraterrestrial. I've talked about it so much that I think people may be getting tired of hearing me talk about what else these things could be, but we do have to take all these different things into consideration, don't we? We have to take into consideration, for instance, the potential that we are dealing with beings from other dimensions. What about time travelers from our future? You know, what about alien nanotechnological robot somethings? You know, robotic-esque life forms. You know, I hesitate just to say robots because there could be different varying potentials here. You know, cybernetica enhancements, all different sorts of things. You know, I mean, there are so many different potentials. Chris, what are you getting into over there?
Well, I was just handed something from the newsroom. I'm sorry to interrupt, but in light of all the other stories we've discussed, this just in.
I hope this is real news.
Oh, it is. It is, along the same lines as Tom Cruise and Anderson Cooper. Matt is not wearing socks.
Oh!
That's all. More information as it develops.
More information as it develops. You know, later this hour, we're going to be joined, as I'd mentioned already, by our friend from the Who Forted blog, Greg Newkirk. With regard to the different potentials as to what aliens may or may not be, there have been stories for years about the potential that there are actually alien bases maybe on the moon, maybe beneath Earth's oceans, and then another theory holds that they may even exist in cavernous regions underground. Boy, this is one that's of particular interest to us on this program. When we come back, we're going to do something I've promised for a long time to do. We're going to get to a few listener emails, and then we'll be joined later by Mr. Newkirk discussing the potential for underground alien bases. He's made quite a splash in the news himself recently talking about this. For the time being, I remain Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report, and we'll be back right after this. While they say never judge a book by its cover, most often people do, and having a great-looking cover may be the factor that determines whether your book will be read by a few hundred readers or a few hundred thousand readers. When it comes to finding great art for your self-published work, and at an affordable price, look no further than Green Alien Art. The style, skill, and talent of Rick Green will enhance any print publication or ebook, and something you've spent months or maybe years writing deserves a well-thought-out and professional cover design. Don't let your book be judged by its cover. Let it bring your book to life with Green Alien Art. Online at greenalienart.com.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org. We'll be right back.
And welcome back, broadcasting live from the bunker, hundreds and hundreds of miles beneath terra firma. It's your Graylian gang, keeping you company every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 Eastern Time. But, of course, our larger listenership is the online audience. We do have a few on terrestrial radio, you know. And that's why Chris has to behave himself and watch what he says.
Well, I always watch what I say, but... But there's been some more developments in the no sock scandal of Matthew Oakley. It turns out he has, in fact, yes, hang on. Yes, we have it confirmed. Matt has taken off his sandals.
Oh, really? Well, controversy in the bunker.
Oh, Candace Oakley's getting in trouble.
You know, like I was saying, I'm sorry, Matt, I cut you off, buddy. Go ahead.
You know, this is just going to lead to a lot of problems for me. So thanks for
that's
that,
right.
Chris.
Scandal's going to erupt. His family's going to want to know what's going on, you know.
Yeah. I mean, did you accept millions of dollars in campaign contributions just to pay them out to the sandal maker?
No comment.
Okay, good.
Good guy. See, he's listening to his attorney. I'm his attorney, by the way. Oh, gosh. You know, I never did get around to what that Paradigm Symposium promotion should be. I think I'm going to issue a press release. I'm going to have Karen Dolan help me write a press release that says that Micah Hanks has come out. He is an Earthling from planet Earth. It's true. And, yes, I am from planet Earth. I know I shouldn't be talking about this.
Did Maslin Othman confirm this?
Maslin Othman has known about it for years, as well as the Secretaries of Defense, you know, at least throughout my 477-year lifetime. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. This is rocking this reporter to his very core, and I don't know how much longer I can report to you.
I didn't think you had much of a core left. I thought they removed your heart in 1877. You know, no, seriously. I think
replaced it with a bag of sand.
It's okay. I'm the doctor.
And
I
a
have
couple
two hearts.
Cogs.
I'm powered by steam and clockwork.
Thank you, Matthew. Yes, yes, yes. Because I'm going to get to listener emails here in a moment. Yes, and Matt hands these across to the console to me here so that I don't forget these emails I promised I would listen before we get Greg Newkirk on the program to tell you what may truly be. You remember the Art Bell days, that Mel's Hole story? This might be a more terrifying story. And for those of you already familiar with that, that dealt with the big hole in the ground, you know, a cave-like entrance. Well, this is going to scare you even worse. You know, I'm one of those guys that kind of starts chuckling a little bit when I apparently Chris
is on the verge of piss-pantsing himself.
Watch out there, Chris. Easy.
It's just caves are just so funny.
They're funny, but they're terrifying. They're terrifying. Anyway, okay, there is a real Paradigm Symposium promotion going on right now. I'll just tell you this. If you like Graylian Report on Facebook, is that right? You like on Facebook, you follow on Twitter. I'm getting this.
That's correct.
Paradigm Symposium also has a page on Facebook. And if you like the Paradigm Symposium page, okay, during the month of July, we have a promotion where if you go and like that page, you're automatically entered for a chance to win a copy of not one, but two books. Okay. A book called Worker in the Light by George Norrie, and then a book called The Haunting of America by William J. Burns. And, of course, the reason for this is because most of these gentlemen are going to be at Paradigm Symposium as speakers this year, George Norrie and Bill Burns of History Channel's UFO Hunters. So the fine folks, their publishers at Forge Books, were kind enough to send us a large quantity of those books. And we're going to be giving away a few copies. We're also going to be doing some nice stuff at the symposium for symposium attendees. I can tell you this. In fact, if you've bought your tickets already, there's a good chance that you may be getting a book or something like that already. Because we're going to try and have some nice, you know, some nice gifts that we send home with everybody who attends Paradigm Symposium. That's the way we like to roll at Intrepid Magazine. Okay, and at the Graylian Report. But if you want a chance to win a couple of those books early on, I can tell you right now, all you got to do is head on over to Facebook and like that Paradigm Symposium page. Now, there are some other details about what's going on at Paradigm Symposium, as well as this contest right now. You can check them out there at the page. We got a website as well, ParadigmSymposium.com. Check us out. I'm telling you, this is the one event you do not want to miss this year. Not just because Eric Von Daniken and George Norrie and, of course, my good-looking self are going to be there, but because I truly think this is going to be one of the greatest meeting of minds in this kind of esoteric community that you will see not only this year, but probably ever in your lifetime. I've got friends who are traveling from other countries who have not flown in an airplane in more than a decade who are coming just to see this. I've got people who are traveling from the far side of the globe. I've got people who have actually emailed me and privately told me, you know, man, it's going to be difficult for me to do this, but you know, my wife and I, we are saving money just so that we can come to Paradigm Symposium. You know, because truly people believe, as do I, that this... And you know what? You don't have to agree with everything that everyone who's going to be speaking at Paradigm Symposium has to say, but this is one of those events where we tried to get a very wide, you know, differential, a large... you know, a good variety of speakers from different areas, from different walks of life and different interests and backgrounds who would talk about the potentials for, you know, our ancient human origins and maybe how aliens work into that. I'll be there talking about artificial intelligence and other things. Scott Roberts, of course, talking about how religion and spirituality play into the notion of ancient aliens. It's going to be big. So check it out online, paradigmsymposium.com. You don't want to miss that. And with that, my friends, as promised, we will move along to the emails. James writes, "Hello, Micah. In order to answer a mysterious nutritional need, and thinking back to your catchy 'eat 'em by the sleeve,' quote, well, I proceeded to the store recently for Fig Newtons, but I was shocked to find when I got to the store that there were no sleeves. They've changed the packages of Fig Newtons to no longer be wrapped in individual sleeves. Now they're in a single tray and a readhesible package, which I think is unique in the industry. What was standard-looking outer wrapping has been transformed to have a mylar interior with a likely Roswell-derived glue so that you may peel open the package and safely and completely close it again to keep it fresh and discourage hadals. Regardless of the technological superiority of the new design, I prefer the traditional sleeves, since they encourage you to eat the whole sleeve, since that delicate plastic of the sleeve always fell apart in that effort to try and open and then reopen it. Also, when did they start calling them just Newtons? I know they are a force to reckon with. Force. Newton. Kind of a joke. Get it? That's a physics joke, folks. But I like Fig Newtons. Regards, James." You know, not only have they changed their name, but I remember back in the old days when Little Debbie, you remember they used to put out what were called Figaroos? Okay? My granddad brought this to my attention the other day. Here he is in his 90s, his late 90s, and he says, yeah, the best ones were the Figaroos because they were individually wrapped. Yes, they are. Individually wrapped fig bars. And if you go to the store now, that's exactly what it says on the box. They've dropped the name Figaroos. They are now fig bars. What happened?
I think the kangaroos rioted.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, Figaroos. That's like calling them star people.
Well,
instead of Star Crunch.
Who knows? Sergio from Portugal writes, "Two memes just clicked in my mind a few days ago. Meme number one, I don't know, therefore aliens." Ah, I know. People every day around the world are getting hip to that one. If you haven't liked Giorgio Tsoukalos' hair on Facebook yet, by the way, go check that out. I have been told there actually is a like page for his hair.
Yeah, I got poked by his hair the other day.
You got poked by Giorgio's hair? Where, in the eye?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just generally.
Oh, just generally.
Facebook.
You and Giorgio kind of have a history, don't you? I mean, well, in a good way. You guys have been going back and forth for a long time.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's going to be, you know, one of those long, long affairs. Like 7 years from now, we'll finally realize that we were right for each other all along.
I wonder if Giorgio would like hearing you say that, Chris.
Well, I mean, it's. I mean, have you seen me? It's pretty inevitable. I'm a charming guy.
Matt? You know, actually, I'll tell you what, Giorgio is a charming guy, and I got to say this, too. Giorgio was on Coast to Coast the other night. We didn't prompt him to do this. Giorgio was on Coast to Coast, and in the middle of the show, he just says, "And by the way, Giorgio, you know, it's going to be great because this October, you and I are going to be hanging out together at the Paradigm Symposium up in Minneapolis." Giorgio's just probably the coolest guy there is.
I could just kiss his face.
Shut up. Would you please kill his microphone?
Wait.
Make the zombie shut his mouth before his jaw falls off.
Do I need to call my lawyer? I believe you just infringed on my human rights.
I'm your lawyer, okay?
I believe you know, Mr. Cohen.
You know, this just ruined my weekend because obviously I'm going to have to come down there with you. We got another email I've got to get to here before we are joined here on the program by Greg Newkirk, who's going to tell a very, very scary story. Andy writes, "Really enjoyed listening to last week's show. On the subject of UFO history, I'd highly recommend a book to you. It's called The Hunt for Zero Point by Nick Cook. Now, Nick is a defense journalist over in the UK, and the book neatly puts a timeline from the Second World War through to the present day of UFO history. It does largely take the line that UFOs are black ops, and extraterrestrial line was basically just a cover to hide military development of these craft, which I don't think answers all the questions, as there might be an ET element behind this. That's what Andy thinks, at very least, albeit very small. Anyway, I'd recommend the book to you and to other listeners if you or they have not read it. There was also a documentary made by Channel 4 over in the UK, where I believe Andy resides. Not sure if it's available overseas. Thanks for that information, Andy, who also noted, he said, you read an email of mine a few weeks ago, so don't want to hog all your listener emails. Oops, looks like I did it again. But you know what? That's good information, Andy, and we like to get that out to folks. Maybe we could get Nick Cook to join us on the program and discuss that, because, you know, that is obviously something that truly fascinates me. What if there are other potentials behind the UFO mystery? What if there really is more going on here? What if it doesn't all just have to do with extraterrestrials from outer space? These are the sorts of problems that I think that we have to take very seriously. I definitely think we have to take these sorts of things seriously. Because if we're wrong, and if these things aren't from outer space, well, are we leaving ourselves open to other potentials? What if they're from right here on Earth? I have, you know, put this idea forth many times that maybe UFOs are representative of some sort of a clandestine earthbound intelligence. And yet there's this other theory going on, okay, that UFOs may be representative of aliens, but aliens that are here on Earth. What happened was on the Who Forted blog, what essentially was taking place was that Greg had put together a somewhat tongue-in-cheek ghost hunting committee, okay, a team, a group, years and years ago. And this team had been defunct for some time, as I understand it. And so Greg hadn't checked this email that had been associated with his account for this group for quite some time. And going and looking at the email account one evening, he notices something strange, that there's this email in there with this kind of long, rambling message from this dude. And the fella is telling him that there are these little creatures on his property. Now, there was an incident, and this incident that was taking place, this man who'd emailed him, was talking about something that had apparently taken place and transpired in some part of rural Kentucky, which is significant, okay, because rural Kentucky, of course, was the site where the infamous Hopkinsville Goblins incident took place many, many decades ago. Now, some people who listen to this program, and of course who've followed this sort of thing for some time now, some of you may already be aware of these stories of this this incident, okay, the Hopkinsville or Kelly Goblins incident, because this actually took place kind of in an area that was between these two towns. And these things are described as being little, you know, 2.5 to maybe 4 foot at the most, kind of diminutive goblins. They were silver or very light-colored skin. They had big ears and things like this, and they were seen running around this farm one evening and eventually began to attack the farm. Well, the people who were there inside the house were very terrified, of course, of these little creatures that were apparently trying to get inside with them. And so what they ended up doing was they ended up defending themselves, firing shotguns at these creatures as they would come to the window. And apparently when they would shoot these little creatures, this is what's really terrifying. When they would shoot these little creatures, they would kind of roll backwards and they would kind of fall off, but they wouldn't. It didn't. You know, the shotgun blasts didn't appear to really harm these things. Now, neighbors nearby had said that they were able to actually hear the commotion that was going on up the hill. And what they tried to do, and this is incredible, what they tried to do was they tried to get help out there to these folks, because they heard this commotion. They thought somebody was going to kill somebody else before it was all said and done. So somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40 police officers go out there, assuming that there's going to be some sort of a terrible situation erupt. And they get out there, and of course these people are all very shaken up. There's something terrible going on. But the police don't see any dead bodies or anything like that. The fight hadn't apparently been going on between these people. Apparently what was going on had been as though these people, like, you know, like they said, had been defending themselves against something else. And as the story goes, they're very, badly shaken up and frightened of whatever had been going on, and they explained to the officers who had been called in, well, yes, and there were these little creatures that were trying to get into the house. And these little things, they were humanoid. They looked kind of like people. Who knows what these things actually were? Was it, you know, some sort of a mass hallucination? Was there something in the water? Did it cause these people all to hallucinate that they were seeing these things? We didn't hear a whole lot about that, although there have been some rather sparse reports of similar creatures. There was something called the Dover Demon, I think, back in the 1970s that was seen. That name, I believe, was coined by Lauren Coleman. And so there have been a few cases where this sort of thing has happened in other instances. Not many cases, but there have at least been a few. And people have wondered what exactly might be going on. What could cause this? You know, were there really goblins, these Hopkinsville goblins? How likely is it that there were actually these creatures there in this instance? This is a really, really bizarre circumstance and a strange story. And then this story arrives in the email inbox of Greg Newkirk over at the Who Forted blog, which seems to tell a story that is remarkably similar. A man has had these little things show up around his property. These creatures, although in the story that was related to Greg, these creatures didn't have big ears. Okay, they were certainly diminutive. They had light-colored skin. If anything, they looked a lot like they might reside underground. You know what they remind me of, guys? They remind... What do they remind you of, Chris?
Hadals?
Yeah, maybe they remind us a little bit of Homo Hadalis.
My children...
Yes, those who inhabit the hollow depths. Okay, I think Greg Newkirk is actually joining us here now, live from Toronto, Canada. Are you with us now, Greg?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We do have you this time. I'd hope that
we have the gremlins figured out.
It was the Hadals. I'm telling you, every time we talk about a news story that is related in some way to these creatures, the Hadals, this is the sort of thing that we're having to deal with. But nonetheless, despite any kind of technical difficulties and the like, glad to have you on the program. So, Greg, we've kind of given the backstory here. What in the world is going on over there in Kentucky, or is there anything going on? What are your thoughts?
I wish I had a good answer for that. I have no idea. I know you've given the backstory. I haven't heard anything in going on 3 weeks now. Of course, the last time this guy did this, I got an email in the old Ghost Hunters Incorporated email account. Dead group, been dead long time. Wrote him back and basically said, "I'm sorry," sarcastically, "we have no inexperience with extraterrestrials." Didn't expect to hear anything back. Thought it was a joke. He finally got back and gave me this whole long story about these little extraterrestrial space goblins, at least he believes they're extraterrestrial, that are coming out of this mine and tapping on his daughter's window, and they stole his dog. Well, you know, of course, I wasn't quite as sarcastic when I responded the second time. He took about 2 months to get back to me, so I don't know when I'll hear back from him again, but it seems kind of odd for somebody who desperately wants help. Yeah. With some underground alien beasts.
Now this story, and I know this is something that I've got to actually, full disclosure here, folks. You know, Greg and I have corresponded about this a little bit, and of course I've followed your blog, Who Forted, for quite a while now. In fact, we ranked that on this program a few months ago as probably the best new blog name probably of 2011.
If everyone was as kind as you.
Yeah, I know. There are a lot of people who are, well, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, stick in the mud. They take this stuff so seriously. And that's something I like about your side, is that you are a bit more tongue-in-cheek, as we are on this program. Now, people who know me know that I'm very serious. But I think that, you know, you have to balance, you have to temper seriousness with, you know, a little lightheartedness, you know, or maybe, in your experience, light-fortedness from time to time. So we appreciate that about your site. And although you are somewhat tongue-in-cheek, I understand that you have, you know, instituted... actually, I've claimed the title of science advisor here, this alien cave-based task force.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but that was kind of tongue-in-cheek, too.
Oh, God, no.
We bought the shirts for nothing, Micah.
We bought the shirts. I know.
I will say... This started as a joke, and it has become more and more serious with every passing day.
Well, people out there obviously are taking this serious. Now, I sent you an email about this. You saw that after the initial story that you wrote appeared on the website, anomalous.com literally featured this as the lead story on the day in question. They said a hush has fallen over the newsroom of the Anomalist, as details have been related about what may be the biggest Fortean story of the summer.
Oh, man, I think a lot of people are going to end up disappointed.
That's often what ends up happening in these cases. So, in other words, you don't have a whole lot of faith that there's any truth or veracity to this to these claims.
You know what? And this goes with most of my views on the paranormal and the fringe and the Fortean. I want to believe desperately. I would like nothing more than for some man in rural Kentucky to be terrorized by these monsters, so that
you sick man.
I'm horrible.
Well, then you can come on over to my team, Team Skeptical.
Yeah. Right.
Because while I'd like to believe, I just don't.
Oh God, listen to him. Sorry, Greg. Go ahead.
I lean towards the skeptical stance, but I can't quite fit on the side of full hardcore skepticism, because I have this massive desire to believe that there are these things. I would love nothing more than to see them. But I mean, obviously, I have to be somewhat of a realist about this. And, you know, there's a lot of little things about this story that intrigue the hell out of me, but then there's a few of them that don't really add up. And until I hear more, I refuse to really believe much of this until I get an address from this guy.
Well, yeah. And there are a lot of details that he's withheld from you at this point, right?
Oh, my goodness. I do know his name. The only reason I haven't posted it is because I promised him that I wouldn't release any of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't even know if that's a real name.
Sure.
I do know the town that he resides in. Again, I haven't posted that, just that it is in Pike County. It's in Pike County in eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I don't know his address. We actually, one of us called the local police station in his hometown, and all they told us was that we get space alien reports all the time, and then they basically wouldn't give us any other information after that.
That's a pretty interesting statement in itself, though, that the Pike County Police Department would tell you that they get reports all the time about space aliens.
They said all the time. We played phone tag with them for a bit. It took us a while to actually get to the chief, but the woman on the line said, oh, yeah, that sounds like a familiar story. And then she said, well, you'll have to call back because I can't tell you more without clearance, blah, 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 blah. All we got from the chief was that they get space alien reports all the time and they couldn't give out private information.
Well, do you think those space alien reports correlate at all with alcohol sale percentages and drug usage?
I imagine in rural Kentucky there is some killer moonshine.
If we have any listeners in Kentucky, you know, you're welcome to pass along information, more information about that if you can. info@grayalienreport.com. You can also send text messages 828-367-7201. We'd love to hear about that just as well. You know, I'd gotten my hopes up, Greg, that you and I were going to, you know, take the team down there. I was going to serve both as weapons expert and science advisor on this expedition.
Listen, I am not one to stand in the way of a good adventure. You know, aliens or no aliens, I am totally serious about getting a group to go to Kentucky at some point.
Oh, there it is. Ladies and gentlemen.
There's no reason that shouldn't happen.
I agree with you. We're going to Kentucky. It's going to happen, and it could get dangerous, folks. So if you plan to tag along with the Alien Cave Base Task Force, just know what you're getting into before you commit to this little romp. Well, now, in the most recent transmission that you received from this individual, whose name you gave me but we will not mention on air, there were also pretty decent photographs that seemed to show animal footprints. Am I correct?
Yes, correct. There were actually two sets of photos that were sent to me. The first ones that were sent were just footprints alone, very strange three-toed footprints. And the following day, he followed up with footprints that had like a ruler next to them, so you could kind of see how big they are, about mm-hmm. 6 inches in length. And he also included some other interesting photos with the second set.
Photos other than those which you posted online?
No, they were of the supposed creatures themselves.
Oh, yes, yes, the supposed creatures themselves. Now, for folks who haven't seen these, and, you know, we'll have this linked in the show notes at GrayleonReport.com. Of course, we've already linked some of this at the Greylian Report, and, of course, I wrote about this also at Mysterious Universe. We've got to get the word out. This has been an interesting story, and I've enjoyed this, and Greg and I have been corresponding about it. But tell folks who have not seen these photographs of the actual alien goblin what this thing looks like.
Again, I wish I knew.
The alien? What, you mean you can't see it?
You can make something out, but you know, I think depending, it's like an ink blot. Depending on what you look, you know, or who you are, you're going to see something different. I thought it looked a little like some mushrooms at first on the side of a tree. But we sent it around, and different people tinkered with the settings, and they, you know, raised the contrast. And if you're looking at it, you can look to see what almost looks like a head and a shoulder and an arm of something stepping out from behind a tree. Now, there's two other photos that were included, and those are extremely hard to make anything out. One of them, I suppose, could look like the side of a head of one of the creatures, and the other one I just think looks like a dinosaur.
Like a dinosaur. It looks like Yoshi from the Super Mario Brother games.
Yes, it does. It does, which is funny because the footprints was the first thing that my wife Dana said. She said, that looks like a dinosaur footprint or a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Ah, it's viral. That's what it is. This is a viral stunt for that Ninja Turtles. Well, actually, but oh, no. Wait, in the film, they're not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're space aliens,
aren't
they?
They're aliens.
And I wouldn't put that past Michael Bay at all.
Ah, it's a viral. We've solved it. Here you go. Folks, you're here to hear first. Oh, my gosh. Well, Greg, you know, I wouldn't want this to dominate the entire thing because your website's so chock full of other good information. What else is going on at Who Forted right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, we are terrible at keeping up to date. This actually came at the perfect time because we had been pretty much stagnant for about 3 months because we're lazy. No. But this has kind of kickstarted us a bit. So we've been trying to update on a regular basis, all kinds of weird stuff.
Greg, I got to give you some advice right now before we turn you loose. First of all, I want to definitely have you back on the program in the future with regular updates because you know, I have enjoyed Who Forwarded for a long time. It's something you need to be doing regularly, and I sincerely hope you will join us as a regular guest on this program with field updates about your ongoing exploits. Okay, that's one thing. The other thing is, now, a while back, I remember our humble engineer, Matt Oakley, submitted an article to the Greylian Report website. And that article, we put it up, and, you know, it was okay. I'll be honest. I didn't put it up. Yeah, Matt's, yeah, he's...
I didn't even read it. It's, you know, we just put it up.
It wasn't really linked, you know, to the Twitter or anything like that. But a little website called coasttocoastam.com went and read it, and they linked it front and center. And that got us probably that single article got us more traffic that month than anything else that went up on the website. And I called Matt when that happened and I said, buddy, you know what? It was meant to be. That wasn't me doing you a favor. That was the universe telling you, okay, game on. And now the ball's in your court. Greg, the universe has spoken to you, whether there's any truth to this story or not. The universe has spoken, okay? And when you're on the right path in this universe, okay, or in this life, the universe has its way of letting you know you've been spoken to. Go for it. Go forth and fort.
Thank you for your sage advice.
Go forth.
I'll take it very seriously.
I hope you will.
As seriously as someone with a website by the name of Who Forted Can.
Go forth and fort. That's our new catchphrase. So, Greg, we're going to turn you loose to go forth and fort. Thank you so much for being on the program with us tonight. This is a fascinating story. I'm sure if there are updates, we will have you back on the program soon, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Man, it's our pleasure. We'll have you on again soon. Take care, friend.
Adios.
That's Greg Newkirk right there, joining us from Toronto, Canada, despite the Hadals chewing on the wires as usual and trying to keep him from being able to join us. But we, in the face of adversity, stand athwart. We'll stand athwart history. We will stand athwart the mainstream sciences and pretty much anything else if we have. Actually, maybe we should say we will stand athwart. Is that the proper terminology? I think I've got a new nomenclature there. Ah, very good. When we come back, we'll be delving into more mysteries of the unexplained. And, of course, during the next hour, we'll be touching on the Frederick Valentich disappearance. It is the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Stay tuned.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader. Tutor or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
What can we learn from our ancient past? What is the mystery behind UFOs? Did aliens visit humankind in ancient times? Each of these tests the very boundaries of humankind's ability to reason, and all will be explored this year at the Paradigm Symposium 2012, October 18th through 21st in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Speakers will include Eric Von Daniken, author of Chariots of the Gods, George Nori of Coast to Coast AM, as well as Giorgio Tsoukalos, Bill Burns, Philip Coppens, and many more. Tickets are selling fast, so reserve yours online today by visiting ParadigmSymposium.com. Reviewing our past and changing our future. For more information, visit ParadigmSymposium.com.
Program, urging you all to fill your hearts to the brim with cosmic love. Do not interrupt me when I am preaching, Chris. Cosmic love, babies, that's right. Fill your hearts with cosmic love and go forth and fort. That's right. I think that's going to have to be one of our catchphrases of the year. Go forth and fort. But, you know, I'm serious about that cosmic love stuff. It really works. And, my friends, if you go out there, try and help one another. Enlighten your mind and just enjoy living. Be good to one another. You'd be amazed the places you can go. So yes, indeed, in the spirit, in the sanctity, in the beauty of cosmic love, go forth, my friends, and fort. We're going to take a longer break here, and then when we come back, we're going to delve into one of the most perplexing UFO mysteries of all time. It's known as the Valentich UFO disappearance. It's truly, truly unsettling. That and much more when we come back here on the Grayling Report.
Fearless, adventurous, bold, and daring. These words all combine to define intrepid, both as an expression within the English lexicon and when describing Intrepid Magazine, the new leader in clear and reasoned thinking. Intrepid Magazine features in-depth analysis of the latest science, culture, conspiracy, politics, and unexplained phenomena, like UFOs and the paranormal. Subscribe to Intrepid for 1 year and receive 12 issues, all for just $14.95. Intrepid Magazine. Boldly going. To learn more, visit intrepidmag.com.
Graylian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Mike Evans.
Welcome back to the program. Keeping you company tonight. Just fortin' around. You know, I'm going to go and I'm going to build a fort in my backyard tomorrow. A fort. Because it's Independence Day tomorrow, you know. Actually, I won't even be at home tomorrow for Independence Day, as usual. Being the international man of mystery, I'll be on the road this 4th of July. Chris, what are you doing for 4th of July?
I'm working and then taking a class. I'm going to be absolutely not free at all on the birth of our nation.
Yeah.
Which isn't really the birth of our nation.
Yeah, you know, I remember one time we had at least one 4th of July where you and myself and several individuals had a cookout. I mean, like, we actually celebrated 4th of July with a cookout.
Oh, yeah, it was good. We had lots of fun, lots of bratwursts.
And now we work on the 4th of July. Matt, are you working tomorrow?
No. No.
What are you doing? Are you having a cookout?
I forgot to tell you.
Oh, yeah, here he comes.
No.
Better late than never.
Yeah, sorry about that. But I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just not doing this tomorrow.
You're not doing the show. You know, that's what we should.
I'm going to finally leave the bunker. It's been, what? Months?
The Reverend escapes the bunker.
Well, you know, I actually have a funny anecdote, or amusing anecdote, rather. Some of you might not find it funny. Regarding the 4th of July weekend, we had that cookout at my apartment. I was in Ingles buying supplies, things like bratwursts and hot dogs, and the bag boy said, "Oh, you're celebrating 4th of July with bratwursts? Why don't you do something American? You know bratwursts aren't American, right?" And I said, well, yes, but you point out to me one uniquely American food, and I will buy it. He's like, well, hamburgers. Like, oh, yeah, totally, because hamburgers are all the way American, and so is apple pie.
Hamburg.
Cheese. The only American food is American cheese, and I don't want that associated with my country.
Chris, he merely misspoke. He meant to say Salisbury steak, okay?
Oh, okay, because that's American.
Chris and I have had this discussion many times. If it's called American cheese, shouldn't it be
the best
cheese ever?
Like, yeah, and American cheese absolutely is not the best cheese ever.
My personal favorite, actually, I think, is Howda, which people will try and tell you is called Gouda. I remember went to a restaurant one time, and a fella came up and said, "All right, we got several different kinds of cheese here. We got a little sharp cheddar. Got some Swiss here for you. Got some Gouda." I said, "Oh, Howda, Gouda," and then just went right on. I'm like, "Wow, okay." And yes, that's the last time I ever let Alex Jones serve me cheese. Go ahead, Chris. Tell us, Chris.
I just wonder if anyone has ever served too much Howda to a god.
Are you a god?
Have you been given too much whiskey?
You know, it's really terrible. I'm sorry. Since we're talking about Alex Jones, last week after the show, this is what we like to do. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Alex. No, don't look at me like that. Alex, I like Alex a lot, okay? Alex Jones has an entertaining show. The content is compelling. And I hope Alex Jones listens to this show and makes as much fun of me as I do of him, because those would be terms of endearment. And if Alex didn't expect people to give him a hard time, he wouldn't sit there in clown makeup and go, "You little bastards are laughing at me right now!" You know, he's well aware of the fact that people sometimes don't know how to take him. But the one that killed me last week
was when he started crying.
Yes.
Now, I don't know, because the descriptor of the video was that he was crying to mock Glenn Beck, because we all know he used to cry quite a bit on the air.
Yeah.
But it was something else.
I don't think he was mocking anybody.
If those were sincere tears, then I am now not just laughing at, but terrified of Alex Jones, because the way he was sobbing, those were body-racking sobs.
But there were many videos of Alex Jones crying like that.
I think we need like a dubstep. We need to get your brother on doing like a dubstep tune with Alex Jones crying, then screaming, and then in the background, Anderson Cooper just giggling like he does. You know,
Matt, I got news for you, buddy. Pump up the bass. I think we could try this. I think we could try this.
Whiskey to a god! Don't look at me like that! Whiskey! Whiskey! Whiskey to a god! God! Whiskey!
Anyway, something like that.
You forgot the part about the tet bar.
Never mind. I think I'm spent. I hope our 4th of July treat to our listeners there is something everybody enjoys.
Now just cap it off with a Sasquatch song. Just do it. Tasty lunch.
Do we have you know, the Bigfoot song? You know, early listeners of the Grayling Report probably are aware of an homage, a sound. You know, can we go ahead and no. I tell you what, let's save that for the first break. We'll take this segment out with the infamous Sasquatch song. Yes, in a Grayling Report original, featuring the voice talent of our dear friend Reese Chittick, who plays the part of Bigfoot. Oh man, that's incredible. Later this hour, we're going to be getting into the Valentich disappearance, but I want to touch on a few other stories that took place in the news this week. Like we've already illustrated, this has been quite a week for news, okay? And in addition to the story about how many Earthlings believe in UFOs, did you also hear this one, that two-thirds of Americans think that Barack Obama is better suited to handle an alien invasion than Mitt Romney?
Is that because he went to Mars?
Never ending. When I was out in Sacramento at the conference Anthony Sanchez put on, there was a gentleman that came up and started talking to me very seriously about how, now last time this happened, I think they took us off the airwaves, so we got to be very careful. They, the ubiquitous they, who learned our language from the World Wide Web, they took us off the internet.
You know, that sounds an awful lot like a voice I've heard on my voicemail quite often asking me to do something with an all spark that I was uncomfortable with.
Sam. Oh, goodness. I'm sorry, folks. We have to be able to cut up a little bit on the holidays. You know, tomorrow is ID4, which, of course, those who are familiar with Will Smith films.
That's the day Will Smith saved the world, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I love is that the picture here, okay, on this story that was featured at spaceref.com. Okay, the picture that accompanies the story about two-thirds of Americans think Barack Obama is better suited to handle alien invasion than Mitt Romney. Well, it has one of the famous screenshots from Men in Black, but, of course, they've superimposed over the faces of of Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, they've got Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
Yeah, but, I mean, I disagree with that, only based on the fact that, you know, and I'm probably going to vote for him. I just like making fun of his religion. Mitt Romney's religion is one that is based on aliens. Like, aliens. Real aliens that have their own planets.
Aliens.
I think it's more...
Well, no, I mean, not, like, they don't, you know, say aliens, but, you know, if you're a good Mormon, when you die, you become a star god and get your own planet. So, I mean, it's
like
where
like,
the unicorns.
What is it? Kolob? It's God, God's planet. Kolob.
Kolob, yeah.
What are you guys talking about?
No, that's
Mormonism.
True. Mormonism.
Have you never read the Book of Mormon? Because it's like Isaac Asimov on crack with more robots.
I was shown a video one evening, if I remember correctly, that discussed this. But you know, being a political year, obviously this is not this is apparently not the kind of thing that you want to be talking about, especially if this individual could end up defending us against an alien invasion.
Micah, could you just stop talking about politics and get back to the Fortiana?
You get back to the fort.
The fort.
Yeah, I guess I was just forting. Yeah. I was just forting around.
Yeah, quit forting around with that. That politics stuff. They don't tune in for that. We need to talk about weird things.
Well,
Keelian matters.
Well, here's a good one. Did you see this? BBC News reported earlier this week that apparently a vampire slaying kit has been bought by the Royal Armouries Museum in Leeds. And I'm looking at the picture here. This thing is remarkably similar to the one that actually is owned by our good friend Billy Sanders up at Reynolds Mansion. Apparently, the 19th century box containing a crucifix, pistols, wooden stakes, and a mallet, not a John mallet, by the way, was sold for 7,500 pounds at an auction in North Yorkshire on Friday. It had been left to a Yorkshire woman in her uncle's will. Apparently, folks, this is the real deal. The Royal Armoury said it expected the box would prove a major attraction when it went on display at the Clarence Dock Museum later this year. The box and its contents all date from the 19th century, but are likely to have been put together in the 20th century. Now, it's thought it was produced to capitalize on the popularity of Bram Stoker's 1897 novel Dracula and the Hammer horror movies that featured such boxes. As well as the weaponry, the box contains a copy of the Book of Common Prayer from 1851 and a handwritten extract from the Bible, which quotes Luke 19:27. It reads, "But those mine enemies which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither, and slay them before me." According to Jonathan Ferguson, curator of firearms at the Royal Armouries, he said, "These kits are often said to have been made as novelties in the Victorian period, but research shows that they are actually later than this. Maybe not so authentic after all. We've yet to establish a firm date for our kit, but we know it will attract a lot of interest from our museum visitors." Interesting stuff. BBC News also reported another story that's worth noting here. You know, in that Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past anthology that New Page put out a few months back, I did an article about ancient nuclear events. We've talked about this many times on the program. Well, Mohenjo-Daro, one of the cities which is believed to be associated with these sorts of ancient nuclear events, okay, apparently could be lost forever. Pakistani officials are saying that they're doing their best to save Mohenjo-Daro, which is considered one of the most important archaeological sites in South Asia. But some experts fear that the Bronze Age site could be lost unless radical steps are taken. No, it's not melting away as a result of the radiation apparently still found at the site. Astonishingly, given its age, the home in question at Mohenjo-Daro, okay, a house still recognizable today with front and back entrances, interconnecting rooms, neat fired brick walls, and even a basic toilet and a sewage outlet. A house that's still recognizable at the site today is built on only two stories. It's even more impressive to walk outside this sort of a house, okay, a real Bronze Age street, and see that there are other homes lining this street. This town, the remnants of what was Mohenjo-Daro, are a marvel even today to look at, okay? And the reason why is because to be such an ancient city, okay, it really was probably at its height around 2600 BC. It was very complex. It featured pretty remarkable architecture for its time. The sewage systems, okay, and the water that carried it, as I understand, may have been more advanced than some in modern-day China and other parts of the world today. It was a city thought to have housed up to 35,000 people, inhabitants of the great Indus civilization. And yet, apparently, there are certain concerns about whether or not this place will continue on. It is definitely a complicated site to protect, given the problems of salinity, humidity, and rainfall, according to one expert interviewed by the BBC. But most of the attempts at conservation by the authorities have been so bad and so amateur that they've only accelerated the damage that has been sustained at the Mohenjo-Daro site. One method used has been to cover all the brickwork across the vast site with mud slurry, in hope that the mud will absorb the salt and the moisture. But when the mud has dried and crumbled, it has taken with it fragments of the ancient brick underlying, of course, which constitute the remnants of these, for what they're, you know, for their time, they were pretty advanced. And, of course, thus contributing to the deterioration at Mohenjo-Daro. An archaeologist, Asma Ibrahim, was quoted saying, "We have to do something, because if things carry on like this, the site will not last more than 20 years. Hard to believe that that's the case, because we're talking about a city, okay, built around 45... Well, actually, you know, I think Mohenjo-Daro may have been built earlier than 4,500 years ago. I know that parts of the city were apparently destroyed and rebuilt, Many ancient aliens theorists, yes, believe that there is evidence for nuclear events that occurred there. Others have said that flooding in the Indus Valley may have contributed to the destruction of the city, and that on the old, you know, building site. People may have built back onto those locations, and so it was built and destroyed and built and rebuilt and destroyed. But a lot of these homes, after lasting 4,500 years, it's incredible because now they're saying that within another 20 years, the Mohenjo-Daro site may no longer be there. That's pretty incredible to think. My friends, how quickly things indeed can change. And unfortunately, with the changes, we have to change our sound for a moment, play some music, head out to the break. But I don't think changes are always a bad thing. Maybe in the case of Mohenjo-Daro, they are. If things didn't change, of course, we wouldn't have butterflies. Change sometimes is good and a necessity of life. When we come back, we're going to change gears and we're going to head over to the Valentich UFO disappearance. There's some new information we'll be bringing to the table tonight here on the program. It is the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks.
If this radio spot were Nikki Baker's life, it would start pretty normal, like this.
And about this far in, Nikki would drop out of high school.
Here, she'd be forced to work two jobs, but then she'd decide to earn her GED diploma.
It would be the beginning of a brighter future. For free info about GED test prep classes, call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org and begin your brighter future.
GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Micah Hanks of the Grayling Report here. Today, I want to talk to you about Intrepid Magazine, the new leader in clear and reasoned thinking in an unpredictable world, and the official magazine of the Grayling Report. Intrepid features the latest in-depth analysis of science, culture, conspiracy, politics, and unexplained phenomena. You'll get expert commentary from an incredible cast of seasoned writers and researchers, as well as interviews and insights from some of the biggest names in the field. And best of all, you can subscribe today for just $14.95. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Subscribe today by visiting intrepidmag.com. And coming soon, look for Intrepid on Nook and Kindle e-readers. Dark heart of Appalachia. We're your bright light, a beacon in the darkness. We are the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio with producer Chris Hayes, engineer Matt Oakley. We're so glad that you always join us on this program. See, here I am trying to be serious, and Matt Oakley's over there
Is he gonna?
He's being Alex.
Are you gonna feed on things?
Don't even think
about
it.
Are you an Austin police officer, Matt? Are you a god?
Have you been given too much whiskey?
Did you shoot up your kids with mercury and say, screw it, I'm going to the tat bar to get too much whiskey? Because if so, you know, we've got a recourse for that. We can march in on the bar owner and shoot them dead.
I want you please
because,
to stop
because
talking.
Because you don't give too much whiskey to a god.
Please stop talking. This public service announcement brought to you by Micah Hanks. I want to change gears here for a moment, and I do want to get... We try to be relatively serious. You know, I think my problem is this. I have had to be serious all weekend, okay? Saturday, I did the iConference, okay? The Alternate Universe iConference with Greg Bishop and Kevin Smith and all these fantastic folks. Sunday night, surprise, got a last-minute request from my friend Dobie Maxwell. Okay, if you haven't checked out Dobie Maxwell, Google him. Okay, Dobie, that's D-O-B-I-E. Check out Dobie Maxwell. He's been on Craig Ferguson's program. He's been on a number of television programs. And I tell you, he's one of the few comedians out there today that actually makes me laugh, like to the point of crying. Okay, well, two. There's two guys, Dobie Maxwell and Axwell Jones. Axwell, that's my comedian name, Axwell Jones, yes. Dobie Maxwell is, yes, he's very funny. But he also hosts a fantastic program Sunday nights called The Mothership Connection. So I went on his program. I got to tell this story real quick, too. I had such an exhausting day on Sunday. Sunday is supposed to be a day of rest. And I've actually sworn off that if I survive 2012, I hope all of us survive 2012. But, you know, I mean, from the looks of some of this Mayan calendar stuff, we may not do that. If I survive 2012, after the Paradigm Symposium, you know, after this new book comes out, actually, you know, the UFO Singularity will be coming out later this year, but, you know, I'm already even working on another writing project as it is. I'm always working on something. As a matter of fact, one fella on Facebook recently said, I want you to help me win a bet, because $5 says that between you and Nick Redfern, a couple of 14 workaholic junkies like you are, the two of you on a weekly basis probably put out more than the likes of, well, probably any of those Enlightenment philosophers and the likes ever wrote in their lifetime. I don't know about that, but we do write a lot. We're pretty prolific. And yes, I just don't know how to stop. And so even on Sunday, I was working. I did the iConference on Saturday. Sunday, I worked all day. And then, as a matter of fact, I'll just tell you, I wrote 3,800 words in addition to doing a radio interview on Sunday and going to a dinner party in between all that, which was hardly relaxing. And so Sunday night, I was scheduled to go at 11 p.m. Eastern time on Dobie's program. I wake up 2 minutes before I'm supposed to go on the show. I had laid down in my office just to kind of listen to the live stream before I went on the air. I literally fell asleep. Jumped up off the couch 2 minutes before I'm supposed to get this call and collapse onto the floor. Because the way I'd been lying on my leg had fallen asleep, okay? This is quite comical. Imagine me trying to stand on my leg and it collapses under me and I completely fall on the ground. And so I'm walking, I stand up on my good leg and I try and put my weight on the bad leg again and I just collapse and go back on the ground again. So there I am, I'm down two times, laughing throughout, realizing what's going on. Pull myself up, massage my kneecap, try it one more time, this time the leg's at least strong enough to be able to move, and get back over to my desk, sit down, phone rings, boom. It's Dobie's producer calling me from the mothership, and I'm at that point do an hour worth of interview on his program. Sometimes I swear I think I'm going a little too hard, a little too fast. Slow down, man. But apparently I don't know how to slow down, because then the next day I get a phone call from Kevin Smith, go on his show last night. And so, yeah, if tonight I'm a little less serious than usual, that's probably why, because I've had to be serious so much for the last 3 days. Sometimes I just gotta chill out and have a good time. But having chilled out and had a good time, it being a holiday week, you know, how often does the 4th of July land right in the middle of the week like that? Yeah, here we are. And so now I do want to change gears just a little bit and get over onto a fairly serious subject. We've talked about this all throughout the program. We've talked about this on previous editions of the program. One of our listeners, the lovely Lulu, actually referred to this as one of the most disturbing stories with regard to UFOs that she's ever heard. I happen to agree. I happen to think this is probably the single most captivating and disturbing UFO story I have heard in a long time. I couldn't imagine anything more disturbing than maybe, well, a Hadal rebellion on Independence Day. This story took place on October 21st, 1978. A 20-year-old pilot, Frederick Valentich, was flying a Cessna 182L. I think I'd said an 182L earlier. It's a 182L. A light aircraft over Bass Strait in Australia. He intended to land his plane at a location known as King Island, where friends were awaiting him. He was going to pick these friends up, and they were going to head back to Moorabbin Airport. Now, the trip was 127 miles. And during that flight, at one point, Valentich contacts Melbourne Air Traffic Control with a very strange, I don't know if you'd call it a complaint. It was a very strange dialogue that erupted with Melbourne Air Traffic Control. Valentich claimed he was being accompanied by an aircraft. He thought it was an aircraft, at least. He said that this object appeared to be 1,000 feet above him, give or take. And he said that this craft was doing some strange things. It was flying in circles around him. He couldn't actually make out the aircraft. All he could see was what appeared to be a greenish glow emanating from some object. It would speed along. It would come back toward him. He was pretty terrified. I'm describing this object as he flew along. Well, before long, he begins to report to the air traffic control that his engine was running roughly. And then finally, he reports, "The strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again. It's hovering," but this time Valentich said something rather disturbing. He said, "It's hovering right on top of me. It's hovering, and it's not an aircraft." This greenish light was apparently hovering directly above Valentich as he flew his Cessna over the Bass Strait. At this point, his final words were, "It's hovering and it's not an aircraft." This was immediately followed by about 15 seconds of what sounded like a loud metal scraping noise. Frederick Valentich and his aircraft were never recovered. He was presumed dead. His remains, nor that of the aircraft, were ever found. And an Australian Department of Transport investigation concluded that there was no determined reason for his disappearance. It was unexplained. And of course, this fueled the idea that maybe some sort of a UFO had attacked and killed Frederick Valentich. It's a very disconcerting story. And I've often wondered about it too. What are these UFOs? Are they from outer space? Or are they from here on Earth? Or are these things interdimensional? I mean, what are they? And despite what they may or may not be, tell me this. What causes them to act so erratically and strangely as they did during the night of Valentich's, well, what became his final flight across the Bass Strait, which, as we can only assume, led to his death? Well, this story was brought to my attention earlier this week by one of our correspondents, Red Pill Junkie, who painstakingly read every page of a new report that has been released. Okay? That's right. The files regarding Frederick Valentich's disappearance were released earlier this week to a civilian journalist for the first time, as I understand it. Now, the recording itself, I believe, of the actual discourse between air traffic control at Melbourne and Delta Sierra Juliet, which was Mr. Valentich himself, who was a young man. I believe he was only in his early 20s when this incident occurred. The audio, I think, was released to his father, who wanted to hear it. I think his father went on to posit publicly that his son had been taken by a UFO and that maybe the UFO would return him one day. Who knows? Sadly, that was never the case, at least as far as we know. I don't know how old Frederick would be today, by the way. But the case, however it may be, apparently the audio was released only in small circles. It's not publicly available. Transcripts of that audio, however, have been made available. There's a Wikipedia page. If you go to Wikipedia, you can actually search for Valentich disappearance and you'll actually find that audio. I'm sorry, not that audio. You'll find the transcript of the audio included with the actual Wikipedia page. And I'll warn you, it's a bit creepy. We read that segment to you earlier. His final words as he's flying along again were, "The strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again. It's hovering, and it's not an aircraft." And then the mic was left open for several seconds, and there was just this loud kind of, and he was never seen again. What about that is not utterly terrifying? You know? I mean, it's utterly terrifying. And so the files, apparently, through the work of a civilian journalist, were released only earlier this week. And our correspondent, Red Pill Junkie, painstakingly went to the trouble of reading this entire this entire set of documents. He wrote to me very briefly summarizing that you should pay special attention to the pages 63 and 64, along with pages 78 through 79, 80 through 81, 82, 84 and 85, 104, 105, 107, 108, 136, 163, 207, 210, 244, and 252. I have to commend him on doing a fantastic job. And what follows are highlights from that report. What I found fascinating about the report is that it gave a clearer picture of who Valentich was as a person. He was a young lad born from Italian immigrants who was not very bright, according to these reports, and he had a poor development as a student. And yet he had a lot of determination in him. He had, after all, failed to be accepted at the RAAF, and he set himself to become a civilian airline pilot in order to show those who doubted him that he could reach his goals. So he was a motivated young guy, but maybe described as not too bright. And like a lot of people who have life-changing encounters, Travis Walton comes to mind, for instance. Valentich had also had an active interest in ufology. He claimed he'd seen one of these aircraft with his mother on one occasion. It was a bright light 10 times larger than a star. He read UFO books. He kept newspaper clippings like this one. And he was also worried about what UFOs could potentially do. He mentioned once that he'd been convinced of the existence of UFOs due to classified RAAF documents that he'd been shown on one occasion, yet he didn't elaborate much on this any further. Red Pill Junkie wrote to me earlier this week that he found that rather puzzling. Valentich didn't drink much and he never did any drugs. He was a calm fellow, the kind of person who thinks carefully before he acts. This is to be considered given the calm tone of his voice that he was said to have maintained that night during the transmission with Melbourne Air Traffic Control, as he described what we can only take to be a UFO. Again, we don't know what that thing actually was. It was unidentified. Valentich had been asking if there were other aircraft in the area, and I can only imagine what might have been going through his mind as he flew along that night. Folks, this is not fiction. This is not made up. This is real. This is documented. This young man disappeared from the face of this earth. And the final words that he left us with were recorded by air traffic control. They were recorded by air traffic control in Melbourne, Australia on the night of October 21st, 1978, during which he described a large greenish light that was flying initially about 1,000 feet above him as he flew along, began to behave erratically as though playing games with him, flying in circles around him, and then finally hovering directly above him before he lost transmission, or rather I should say Melbourne lost transmission with him. And Valentich was never seen again, never heard from ever again. This is not a bunch of made-up BS. This is not something that you see on television on prime time. This isn't something you see in a movie. These are real-world events. Now, whatever that thing was may not have been an extraterrestrial aircraft from outer space. These may not have been aliens from Zeta 2 Reticuli. But something happened to this guy. Something happened to him. And he nonetheless remained fairly calm during his discourse with air traffic control in Melbourne. And yet, apparently, Valentich, who had a girlfriend who was interviewed, she mentioned that he used to sweat profusely and change his tone of voice when he was nervous. He did get nervous from time to time. He wasn't nervous that night, at least as far as we could tell. Or maybe he was, who knows. But the possibility that he committed suicide was nonetheless considered by investigators, given how he had failed his last two exams. He had also been known to have lied to his family and to one of his flight instructors. He seemed to have suffered from depression. His girlfriend described him as not really being a Friday night person. One of his closest friends shunned the idea that Valentich could have considered the idea of suicide himself. RPJ wrote to me earlier this week. He said, "That was what gripped me, but I haven't really found any official acknowledgement that Valentich had an encounter with a UFO in these documents, even though they never managed to find a reasonable explanation for his disappearance. And one more thing," he wrote. He said to me, on page 79 it reads as follows, Frederick was a firm believer in UFOs. He'd saved articles and info on UFOs. He'd read Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Daniken and others and went to see movies on the subject too. This interest started when he was in school about 6 years ago. His belief had been strengthened recently when he was allowed to see the RAAF's confidential files on UFOs at East Sale and at Laverton. He wouldn't discuss these details with his family as they were confidential. Very interesting. On the same page, it also wrote that Frederick worried about attacks from UFOs and what they could potentially do. His father had told him there was nothing that they could do, and therefore there was no point in worrying. And that is indeed very gripping. But, you know, there was another part of the entire thing, the report that was sent along by Red Pill Junkie, that gripped me a little differently. And I called Chris this morning, and I said, I've got to be a girl, man. Because this one, when you have somebody in your life that you care about, you know, when you honestly love somebody, Chris, you remember me telling you this, it changes the way that you look at the world. It really does. It changes the way that you look at everything around you. You know, and there are different kinds of love. I talk on this program all the time about cosmic love. I've defined it in the past, you know, a state of mind which allows us to open ourselves to connectedness with others and to potential enlightenment. Think more clearly, act more rightly, be better people, and improve not only your life, but the lives of those around you. Enjoy living more as a result. Be good to people. And actually embrace sort of universal unity, cosmic love. This isn't a bunch of New Age stuff. I don't consider myself a New Age. If anything, I was speaking with a friend of mine, Pam, the other day, and I said, if anything, I'm not New Age. I'm old age, you know, and rightly so. But I'll tell you something. The cosmic love thing, my friends, is very real. And C.S. Lewis probably articulated the different kinds of love even better than I don't think he mentioned cosmic love. He talked about the different kinds of love. And there is very much that kind of love that exists between two people who literally see the sun rise and the moon set. I'm sorry, the sun rises and sets, the moon rises, you know what I mean, you know. The sun, the moon, the stars, the light, the dark, the coming and the going of life. When you have that kind of relationship with someone, it changes your life. When you feel that kind of love for someone, that changes your life. And so there was a part in the report that RPJ sent along that particularly grabbed me. At one point, Valentich was said to have told his girlfriend, "If a UFO landed in front of me now, I would go in it, but never without you. Never without you." I always wonder, you know, in the event that something incredible took place. You know, one time Jim Mars was asked a similar question. You know, if you had a chance to go up in a spaceship and see an alien world, would you do it? And Jim's response was, "Yeah, I think so. I think I'd want to take my wife with me." You know? And despite whatever the circumstances, we may never know. You know, that's what people listen to programs like this for that very reason. I think that while we sometimes want to know what happened to someone like Frederick Valentich, sometimes we want to know what's happening at a location like Loch Ness or what may have happened at Roswell. We look for answers, but sometimes the pursuit of the unexplained alone is what makes it the most fun. And yet this circumstance about Frederick Valentich, it's tragic. There are people who still want... I mean, the story I read earlier, you know, the percentage here is that 36% say, yes, we believe UFOs exist. There are 17% that say, no. In other words, no, we don't believe that unidentified objects of whatever kind of origin, terrestrial, extraterrestrial, interdimensional, whatever... origin. No, I don't think they exist. I don't buy it. And yet here is absolutely irrefutable evidence of something strange that took place in the late 1970s over Australia, which
remains unexplained. This man was never found. And all we know, unless he was a really good liar and was willing to die with that lie, to die with the fabrication, or otherwise find some very clever way of going into hiding and never, ever, ever resurfacing. Something happened that night. And for all we know, we can only assume that Mr. Valentich did not survive the experience. But he had said that, indeed, if a UFO ever landed in front of me now, I would go in it. But never without you. He told that to his girlfriend. I'm incredibly touched by that. And it reminds me that despite whatever the circumstances are behind these sorts of reports, we look into it because we're human. It means something to us as individuals. As individuals, and of course, as individuals who work together, because we mean something to each other just as well. We'll be back right after this. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Grey Alien Report.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
One second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project, we never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
You know, yeah, I know we got a little heady during the last segment. I do think sometimes that's necessary. And we've been having a lot of fun this week. It's going to be a holiday week. I can't really just say a holiday weekend. Tomorrow's 4th of July, smack dab in the middle of the week, when most of our podcast listeners will begin downloading this week's audio. And so I did want, after that very necessary and serious segment about the Valentich UFO incident, I think it's fantastic that we've got this new information. Red Pill Junkie, many thanks to you, our friend, somewhere out there, who continues to bring us information. And yes, as we have had our fantastic announcer, Mr. John Anderson, announce to you, those phone lines are open. If you'd like to call into the program, 828-398-4886. You can text us anytime, 828-367-7201. And finally, emails can be received at info@graylianreport.com. The final 10 minutes of the program, actually, we're close to about 8. We're going to kind of just do a free-for-all here because I think with the holiday coming up, we want to have a little bit of fun and be, you know, we don't want to send everybody home on a heady note, but I do want you at very least to think about that. And the very reason that I was so touched by that story of Valentich and what he said to his girlfriend, that is so meaningful. And the interrelationships that we have in this life, they wouldn't mean anything. You know, none of this stuff, none of this paranormal stuff, none of the politics, the Supreme Court, you know, I don't care what it is, you know, or any of the non-news that we've talked about, you know, the sensationalism that the media puts out there. That, you know, Chris and Matt, despite the fact that Matt is still not wearing socks, apparently, according to sources.
Yes, our sources report that not only has he stopped wearing sandals, but he's also removed his overshirt. He is just in his shirt sleeves, folks. It's horrifying.
You mean the what they call the tank top there?
Yeah, the tank top, or, well, I mean, I would say what it's commonly referred to around here, but it's insensitive. Just like Matt.
There was a North Carolina connection here somewhere. Where was the North Carolina connection? Can someone help me remember what about North Carolina I was supposed to talk about here? Oh, I can't remember.
Was it Sasquatch in North Carolina?
No, not Sasquatch in North Carolina. No, it wasn't a UFO in North Carolina. No. Seemed like there was a North Carolina connection to all this that I was gonna brilliantly, as I always do every week. It's very difficult for me to be so brilliant on a weekly basis, and yet nonetheless somehow I was going to tie all these disparate elements together and make sense of the madness yet again right before we ran out of time this week. I know one thing we forgot to do. We forgot to play that Bigfoot song, so we're going to take you out this week with the legendary Bigfoot song here, a Graylian Report original. Featuring the voice talent of none other than Mr. Reese Chittick. But before we take you out with that, what that's going to drive me nuts all night if I can't remember what the North Carolina connection was. Probably not important. You know, probably not important. I do want to bring up a funny story that ABC News carried earlier this week, however. This one, well, I don't know if this is funny or not, tell you the truth. Matt has already determined for us, yes, indeed, this one's funny.
What are you, like the Minister of Humor?
Hey, what are you?
Are you like the fun czar? Is that what's going on? Do you work for Obama? Is that what's happening?
No, what's your problem?
We got a drug czar, we got a fun czar, we got a poor czar. We got a, you know, for not being socialist, we sure do have a lot of czars running around.
Listen to this guy. Well, look, I'll tell you this. I wonder, is there a porn czar?
I surely hope not. And if so, if that position is open, I have a few people I could recommend for it.
Well, the reason I ask is because a man, we couldn't make this up. One man, okay, has claimed that he is apparently claiming that he suffers from headaches and has to take painkillers 30 minutes, okay? 30 minutes before watching X-rated movies, according to a scientific case study, because apparently watching the adult films causes him to have inexplicable and absolutely terrible headaches. Now, the unnamed unmarried male software professional, age 24, complained of severe exploding headaches that developed gradually and peaked only minutes into the sexy scenes. Very, very strange. This guy's interesting because he's just watching adult entertainment and not actually engaging in a sex act, according to Don Buse, associate professor of neurology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and director of behavioral medicine at the Montefiore Headache Center in New York. But he probably still gets aroused and excited while watching these films, which may even be worse than, well, actually engaging in a sex act because there's no release. Who knows what's actually causing these headaches? You know, last time I got a really bad headache, I mean like a migraine headache, was at the Strange Lights UFO conference in Sacramento, California. I literally walked off stage after giving a 45-minute lecture about magic mysticism of the molecule. Some folks may know Mel Fabregas, the moderator and also the MC that weekend. He is, of course, you know, well known through Veritas Radio. And I remember right before I walked on stage, he pointed at me. He said, "Micah Hanks, who is author of the book Magic Mysticism of the Molecule," and he looks at me, points, and he says, "and soon to be a contributor to Veritas Radio." So, yeah, Mel was there, and he and I got to hang out a good bit that weekend. It was fantastic getting to catch up with Mel. But after my lecture, I walked off stage. Mel patted me on the back and said, "Fantastic, man." I walked to the back of the room. Scotty Roberts was there and was about to give his lecture. You know, they pair Scotty and I together because he and I are the Intrepid / Paradigm Symposium guys. And Scotty's giving his lecture on Rise and Fall of the Nephilim. And all of a sudden, I look to my right and I think, have I been staring out the window or something? What's going on? I look to my left, and I still see what looks like a big sunspot, you know, like I've been staring at the sun. And when that happens, I know exactly what's happening. I'm about to have a migraine headache. And sure enough, I had to go lay down in the hotel room for about the next... Well, you know, actually, I went and I sat back down, and I actually somehow weathered through the onset of the headache and listened to Scotty's presentation and then went back to the hotel room and rested for a while and somehow managed to get over that headache. And then my good friend Dr. Rita Louise, she's been a guest on the program, of course. Rita supplied me with some painkillers to help me get through the night. I thought it was funny, though, that I would just get an inexplicable headache right after my presentation. And I was told after the fact, get this, apparently Richard Dolan also talked about going to a UFO conference, giving a presentation, and getting a weird, sudden, inexplicable headache like that. And furthermore, medium Michelle Menny was there that weekend, and I mentioned to her, "Oh, I'm sorry I had to disappear there for a while. I kind of had a bad headache." And she said, "Oh, you're not the only one. Four other people have come up to me and said that they suffered from migraine headaches today at this conference." What the hell was going on?
Was there an ice cream truck around?
No.
Oh.
Not that I saw anywhere. I mean, it was weird. It was absolutely bizarre. I have no idea what was going on. It was really, really strange. And a little unsettling. Speaking of unsettling, producer Chris Hayes just brought to my attention something that I did hear earlier today. This was the North Carolina connection, sir. This was the North Carolina connection.
That's really, really insensitive, Micah.
It's an homage. It's an homage, yes.
I know.
Andy Griffith of Mayberry was pronounced dead today. He lived on, what was it, Roanoke Island?
Yeah, he was laid to rest on Roanoke. And there's an even more local connection, a Grailian Report connection. 2 years ago, I went to a wedding of one of my former college friends in High Point, North Carolina, which I believe is the town that Mayberry was based on. I'm not sure if it was High Point or if I was even in High Point, but I was in the town that was supposedly Mayberry. And it was so weird because it was just, you know, normal town, and then all of a sudden it started getting like historic downtown, small town area. And then there was an 8-foot tall
Sasquatch.
I don't know what kind of metal it was. It looked like bright gleaming chrome. A statue of Andy Griffith in his sheriff uniform, standing with his fists on his ribcage, kind of like, you know, like Superman, just puffing his chest.
Well, Andy Griffith was Superman.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, that's really weird to see, but that's also really cool that even though it being Mayberry didn't bring really, obviously, any financial success to the town, they're still really proud of the fact that Andy Griffith called their town home for however many years the show ran.
Absolutely. I understand the program was actually filmed out in California, right? I'm pretty sure it and Dukes of Hazzard, in fact, were filmed out in California. If I remember correctly, this actually, yeah. But that's Hollywood for you. You know, it's based on life here in the mountains. You know, oh my gosh, it's that time again. We have been caught. But, you know, it's a holiday weekend. And, you know, I've wanted to do something kind of special all week. And so I'll tell you this. We got to wrap up the podcast. But for those of you listening live this week, we're going to do a little extra segment following the program. So stay tuned if you're listening live. For those of you who listen to the podcast, check us out live at some point. And you can also find us online at GrailianReport.com. I'm Micah Hanks. Until next time, my friends, stay strange.